do the public.
They should have copies of what these articles are that we don't read.
Right, right.
But my problem, I can't get the information prior to the meeting. They want to be, if you have public comment, you need to know what you're talking about.
Okay, so we'll do.
You won't hear any of this until.
Do both of these.
Right.
And that's the thing that we discussed, not like city council.
But yeah, that's the last part.
Right.
Because it's hard to open the.
Like a message board thing.
I don't know.
This is, those are the writers.
Well, they put a whole sign in day one.
The same amount that.
Yes.
Let me go get a script. I think it's in.
Straight from you guys.
We could put one of these electronic message boards up to where it goes.
To where it goes.
All day long. And it's like the fire one.
Yeah, but this year, they made a range with that neighbor that was bothering.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of one of this down here.
We had like 4 minutes. We might have went by.
Oh, yeah.
2 minutes of it.
And when they say off, it's not gonna be shut off. It's one of them stop.
Yeah, because that year.
9 o'clock.
Let me see what you got. You can bet your butt Shell's too cheap. They don't even turn the big signs off at night, which I asked them why they leave it on.
Oh, well.
Because that comes through the window.
This potential is gonna take workers because this will be like a flashing one.
Well, see, you got a lot more than I did. You get this from here.
Single family house in an R3 zone.
Oh, have they really?
Well, yeah, if you go down there, you won't see.
Yeah, I went through the online this afternoon and it just shows there are two.
Really?
Exactly. But what they do is they put,
Okay.
There were two different blue sections.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. They.
Moratorium. We're on outside water use. But trying to find it is probably.
I don't use my phone at all.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to learn.
Okay.
My son's kind of trying to find me a, something that I get by with about maybe a laptop.
Okay, yeah.
I don't have a lot of it. I looked on that today.
I found the document you were looking for.
No, I don't know how to.
I don't either. Not, I don't have any of that stuff on my phone.
No, I just got what mostly somebody else put, like Pam. Like the planning commission was listed.
Here's something else that I've given to.
Or sent to that. I started this for you right now, but if I come across it, yeah, there it is.
That's me.
She wants to do some sort of a report. And so when I was drafting that main line on water report.
Sure. That's what I'm talking about, where you can actually,
I like
in my experience, I draw stuff on ream of paper. So when I come here, I know what it's about, other than what it said right there on that paper.
Right, so.
That's where I got the numbers. One is, it's 21, I think, dash three and 21 dash four, that's.
Pros and cons.
Well, right.
One mentioned the structure, the other mentioned. Nothing mentioned.
Signs.
That's cool.
Well, the trailer is.
She was wanting, she thinks, okay, a good status report is gonna.
That's why you have.
That's why you should get down here.
Take a lot of time.
So you know what's going on at the meeting.
They used to have.
They can't afford for the people to pay for it.
So you plan on.
You used to be able to, when you do things, you're not there. We sit down and review it and phone.
And when I talk about this.
They've gotten too cheap now.
But in, like I say, in the planning commission, there's gonna be.
They've struck this out of here.
There's gonna be an agenda line.
And I don't really understand this first statement, trailer coaches.
Where you find it.
Camper units and trailers shall not be stored in a required.
My computer.
Front or side.
And the funny thing is.
Okay, you're doing it in the backyard.
You can't get in the backyard.
These additions for you, meeting correct.
Right.
You go right around town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's great.
Especially when you have two boys.
The other.
Hooped all over them, huh?
Is.
Yeah, really.
Have issue with is.
I'm a wonder if you want to do it.
Yeah, and that's what I got tied up to, so we both have the same thing.
No, I looked at it today.
Recommendation is.
And I can't.
Add two words. Original manufacturer.
Well, you know what?
Equivalent or better.
Yes, that's exactly what I said.
Your sign. Go back to the front page of your phone.
Oh, I don't have the second.
You don't have the second page. But in that, I have a couple of highlighted.
Yeah, like I have weather.
Yes. And then that way you could just bring it up and it'll be there.
Okay.
That part I know.
Well, you know more than that.
But I don't do it on my phone.
Why, how do you come to that?
See, that's why I would like to come down.
That's a good question.
Yeah. I have a chance to read it because I might read a little slower.
Hey, just put your name on.
Yeah.
You got it. Oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
Okay.
You don't want to get
people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're talking about something like that too. I have Yamhill County Plan A, but I'm going to be anything for city. I'm going to figure out a way. But if I can get my son around, he's pretty good at this stuff. He does it so fast.
I have to call my granddaughter there where there can be. Huh? I have to call my granddaughter
to do it for me if I can't find someone.
So we can do that. Jason, destroy the wire.
See, Carlton's looking on carrier. Their carriers are waiting for extremely long days.
Carriers, the letters.
Ma'am. See, I used to get my mail at 11:30, just like clockwork. Now it's coming 4:30. Sometimes I'll go out and check it at 4, no mail. So next morning I check it, and there's my all my damn mail on there. Yeah, it's gone from roughly an 8-hour day to like a 12-hour.
Well, you know, when I was going around for one of the petitions, I was over here at the subdivision
street on the
by Buell Park, yeah,
yeah,
the other end down there. And there was a couple that wanted to join A. But he says, right now we just can't. He and his wife are both business owners. He says, and we're working 6 days a week, 12-hour days.
Within 100 feet of
he must have been not being an independent.
Yeah.
But see, this is what I like about this. Even if I can't do it, I can run a house.
Right, right.
And people really need to get it in the home.
Yes, the sign for Uncle.
I don't know.
Digital.
If they're going to allow electronic signs, I can just run it underground wire and do it myself on my property and do my own.
That would be
like. I have my where my whole roof lights up saying, boo, no.
We want to change
on those recall things, for instance.
To 150,
200. I'm sick of that. I'm taking the blame for everything
that
happens.
Yeah. So
I do like about it, whether or not, I don't know what all you can go here to Facebook and you can watch your talk to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like today she appeared on TV. She was so mad. She said, I'm so mad. She said, they are hiding the truth from the taxpayer on this West Side Trail. They want to get the West Side Trail in only so the land is there for light rail to come in.
And his wife's.
And she said, I'm so angry that they will not tell the taxpayers.
Yeah.
You get so, light rail in here, not taxpayers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Metro's done through and they can't go.
What everybody's ready. I said we go ahead and call this thing to order. So the Planning Commission meeting for March 16th, 2022 is called to order. Do a roll call of commissioners. Anybody? You sit here.
Oh, here. And here. Washington's here. I need to turn that up.
Oh, no, we're working here. Do we have any other commissioners on?
Sue's on. Sue, can you hear us? Are you there?
She said she
she's there.
Had a hoarse voice, so she may not even be able to answer us.
Let's check. Is Walt, can you hear us?
He's good to go. He's unmuted too.
Walt, are you there?
Can't hear you, Walt.
Can you folks hear me?
There you are. We just got you all.
Perfect.
Oh, okay. Okay, real good. I just started
finishing one call. I was wondering if Sue could hear us.
Okay.
Yeah, I finally figured out the sound.
All right. So just, I guess, Richardson here?
Yes, Richardson here.
All right. So roll call is there.
Everybody except for...
we're missing Chair Moore.
Is absent.
So we'll just moving right into this electronic message center signs. Just I was wondering if you could would do us a solid and just kind of go over the history of this. As I think I came in the middle of the sign issue, and I don't know the rest of the commissioners are new to it. So could you give, are you able to give us a timeline on when this came through originally, planning and so forth?
Well, honestly, okay, I just want to make sure you folks can hear me, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, real good. I'm just having some issues with connectivity here. I don't have a lot of history on this. I know that there was an interest to get this thing moving forward. The last time I moved forward in terms of a staff report was last December. It was that, and so at that point, it was just a work session to discuss the proposed amendments. I think the general, actually, I think it was November. Excuse me, I think it was last November, and there was a general consensus as to the acceptability of the proposed amendments. And then I was directed to go off and do the staff report and prepare for the Planning Commission and at our next available open meeting. So that's about the best I can provide. I wish I had more information, but I think most of the heavy lifting was done before I came on.
I think the same for all of us. We had a meeting in October on the 20th, and it was open at that point for some public comment. I have notes here from that meeting with Mr. Davis and Ms. Wilson made some comments on it. And from what I'm reading here, Walt, we should be opening that up right now for additional public comment. Is that true?
Well, we could do it one of several ways. We can go ahead and simply proceed with the staff report and then open it up for public comments. Or if you're comfortable with the information that's provided, and in fact, you're right, this does go back to October, but if you're comfortable with the information that's provided, you can accept additional commentary and go from there. Again, this is not a quasi-judicial meeting. This is where you're open to the public to accept comment on the material. So I will leave that up to you. Generally, I do start with the staff report, but whatever works for you is fine.
Would any of the commissioners be opposed to listening to the public before we go into the staff report?
Okay.
I think we should just go to...
Hey, Shane?
Yes?
Can I make a comment?
Please.
Why don't you have Walt do the staff report? It would help refresh our memory as to what we were
doing. That would be a good one. Sure. Okay. Yeah, I reviewed all this, and I forget that others may not have. Walt, would you be able to do the I think that Mr. Davis is correct, though, that we maybe should, if you went through the staff report, it might jog some memories.
Okay, that sounds real good.
Thank you.
Okay, this is an application to amend our development code, and there's a couple of changes that would be coming here. It would change the reader board sign requirements and establish new regulations for an electronic message center. Note that the staff report also includes a copy in attachment A that goes through the particular changes, and I'll just summarize them. Basically, section 10.64.030 is amended. This would strike out requirements limiting service station reader boards to advertising fuel prices and also strike out the requirements for reader boards to be permanently attached. So that was just a minor change. The big change is a new section, 1064030J. It establishes regulations for electronic message centers. Briefly, they are allowed in all zones except residential. The maximum size for such a sign is 24 square feet. The changeable copy portion is calculated at a rate of 2 times that of other signs. Now, simple explanation on this. If you have a 20 square foot EMC, it counts as 40 feet, 40 square feet toward your maximum allowable signage. So basically, if you have an electronic message center, your square footage is effectively doubled in terms of counting toward your maximum square footage. We have some limitations on if they're static signs, they have to be up for 10 minutes. Brightness must be reduced from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. And if a sign is within 100 feet of residentially zoned land, not that there's a residence, but residentially zoned land, the static display must be turned off between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. Alternating message signs can go for at least 15 seconds, and they must change at 1 second intervals. No, 15 seconds, but the change must be 1 second. And these must be turned off entirely between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. It's kind of interesting. This is pretty straightforward stuff. It is kind of interesting that our code does not have a process to amend the code as a sort of fill-in, if you will. I use the, or a substitute, I use the revisions to the comprehensive plan, which again is a text change. And I will just note for the record, going through all the requirements under section 10.132, 060 through 090, there were no issues. These sort of things, amending side codes, excuse me, this is hay fever season here and a little stuffy. These things are basically left to local jurisdictions. There was no letters of opposition that I'm aware of. DLCD did not have any comments on this. And it, for the most part, these are local decisions. And with that, it's based on the work sessions and compliance with our code just to go through these changes. Certainly staff's recommendation, the Planning Commission adopt the material in Exhibit A of the staff report. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Again, excuse my sort of nasal here, but springtime has arrived to the valley.
I have a question.
Yes.
When I was looking through the paperwork that's in on the city website in regards to the different amendments and, I mean, regulations and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
10.64.030J is already assigned to another item, roof signs.
Well, that's kind of interesting. This is right off the code for a new section. I tell you what, let me do this. If you can hold for a moment.
And if it says that this is a new, then it also had K, it had fascia signs.
Well, that is interesting here. Please bear with me, 030. Okay, I think there was a numbering issue there. And therefore, G-H-I. J's roof signs. And K, and actually then I think this thing would just be changed. I think you raised a good point, although it really doesn't change the context. Just change 030J to 030L. So again, it doesn't change the wording. It's just a matter of getting the number correct. So I would just, again, if this moves forward, just change 0.030J to 0.030L.
Okay, and when they're talking about this sign, I know that what brought this controversy up is that sign down at the fire department.
Okay.
That's definitely more than 24 square feet, right?
I'm not sure. Again, I sort of came into this, I think, like, you're probably far more aware of that.
No, I'm not. I wasn't here then either.
Okay.
Well, Walt, if I may, I believe there's a gentleman here that can speak to the size of that sign pretty clearly. It's Chief Jensen sitting here.
That is 40 square feet. The changeable side of it.
Excuse me, Chair Cork.
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Walt, the code that's being proposed, is that applicable to any of the signs that are already in existence, or is that any signs that apply from once this is enacted on?
Once this would only apply at the point of a new sign. Other signs, pre-existing signs, are effectively grandfathered. Bear in mind, if for some reason the sign is torn down and replace, they would have to replace it with a sign that conforms to the code.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, the new code that's going in place would not be applicable to the fire station sign.
Correct. That is correct. That is pre-existing non-conforming. They're allowed to maintain that sign.
Okay. So nothing in our planning or anything has said anything about reader boards or any of this kind of signage before this. This is all new.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then Walt, I've got another question for you on the, attachment A, I guess would be section two, the time allotments for the signs being lit and
turned off.
For example, the Shell station, from what I understand, opens at 6 a.m. Would they not be able to turn their sign on for the first hour of their operation in the morning?
This only applies to message signs.
Okay. Anybody else have a question for Walt regarding? So I guess then, Walt, then that would be the best time now to have anybody that wanted to talk about it. Is that right, in the public?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we open it up to the lady with her hand up.
So I'm Patty Perrin, 215 North Maple. I live right next door to the bank, Umpqua Bank. Azalea is in between us. And I have a few concerns with this electronic, the message center ones. No, the bank does not have one now, but they merged recently with Columbia Bank, I believe. And if somebody decided that they wanted to change the bank's sign that stands, 20 feet tall, however it is, one half of my kitchen, my dining room, and my living room face the bank. I have approximately 13 feet of window that is along that side, if you add them all up. So I have seven windows across that side of my house. They put LED lights in, six of them, for their parking lot. and my house is old. When you walk from my bedroom into the bathroom, then you walk into the kitchen from the bathroom. I was hit smack in the face because those LED lights are coming right into my kitchen. Not only that, my refrigerator is just opposite of the window, so the light reflects onto my stainless steel refrigerator. Then when you go into the dining room, the light shines into the bay window, which is three windows, and right across from the windows is a built-in hutch with a mirror that's about 4 feet wide and 2.5 feet tall, so the light then reflects into that mirror, which is shocking enough. And then into my living room, there's two windows there, and the light shines in there and then reflects directly onto the TV, which is opposite those windows. So my concern is that if, God forbid, they would change that sign, I would have that glaring into my half of my house, basically 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And that, the bank, I called them after about a week of not being able to deal with those lights on, you know, in the dark, because I get up about 3:30 in the morning, so they're on. And they were kind enough to put them on motion sensors. So I only get it if somebody happens to be in the parking lot, an animal or whatever the case may be, which I'm fine with it, that part of it.
But your concern would be updating their sign.
But my concern would be if they updated that sign, it would be glaring into my house. And I don't have trees that are going to block that in the summertime. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a tree, but it's tall and the light shines in regardless.
Now, Walt, would this, the verbiage here, would that not protect her home within, it's within 100 feet?
Exactly. Yes, yes, exactly.
You'd be protected by this verbiage at your house personally.
I don't think so, because I think I am more than 100 feet. Part of the problem is that if you were going from the street to the bank, then maybe it's, you know, 75 feet or so. The 27 feet of the strip next to my house is technically city property. So I'm within that, I'm outside probably just a few feet of that 100 feet range. And, you know, part of my issue is that within this, with the exception of the block between T&E and City Hall, business and residential are so intertwined on Maple and even over on Olive that anybody that puts up a sign like this, it's going to affect a residential home. And I just, like I say, I have a concern with this, not only because it potentially could affect me, and maybe not, but it would affect the two neighbors that are across the street from me. If the Shell station decided they wanted to put up a sign, it would affect at least four people down there. And part of what this says in here, you know, 10.132.909, it says that it will not have an adverse effect on abutting property, but it will in a fair amount of the cases. And then it says that it's a benefit to the community. And I don't get that at all, how it can benefit anybody other than the business that is having the sign.
So just for your specific situation, I'm looking at a satellite image of the bank. I don't believe that the bank would be permitted to put a sign in, a reader board sign that was illuminated under these provisions. I mean, I understand what you're saying about the gas station, but I believe that they are also, there's a residence probably 30 or 40 feet from it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how often these signs would actually be able to be utilized in Yamhill, to be honest with you.
Well, just out of curiosity, and maybe this is going to come off as a little sarcastic, but why did people want to change this town so much? People live here so that they're not getting all of this BS like they do in bigger cities, like Portland or whatever. They don't have stuff like this in Amity or Dayton, or I don't even think they have them in Newburgh. Maybe down further, you know, toward Fred Meyer, but I can't comprehend why people want to move here because it's a nice little quiet town, but yet they want to make all these funky changes with reader boards and, you know, all this other stuff. I guess it's just, I want to stay here because I like that it's an old town and quiet, not for reader boards and all this other crap. Anyway, I'm done. At least I didn't yell this time, right?
I missed that. I had to leave.
So. Sorry.
Yeah. Just the list of, and you might want to, I didn't differentiate if they were wanting to speak in public comment or they were wanting to speak during the public hearing. So you might want to ask them.
Okay. Thank you. Well, again, so I mean, I just go to the sign in sheet. There's Doug Edwards.
Yeah.
Did you want to speak to this, sir?
Well, I checked no, but this brings up a point for me. I live on.
Oh, I apologize. I did not say that.
I live on 580 North Maple, directly across from that Shell station. And that sign's on 24/7. I mean, you'd think when they close, I think it's 8 o'clock, that the sign could go off and then come back on at 6. But we have to block out those windows on that side because they're so bright. And if you're not open, what are you advertising for? That's just something for y'all to consider because, you know, I don't want to play with my windows, for heaven's sake. But that's what it's going to come to if everybody wants to put in a reader board. So that's all I have.
Thank you. And then Ms. Parents next. We already did that. Brian Jensen.
Brian Jensen, 525 North Olive. May, I'd like to present pictures, kind of what they've talked about. There's pictures of all the signs in town and how they reflect on everybody's homes. I'd also like to submit the nuisance report that was filed with the council, and the council had the electrician come out and check the lighting on our sign. They found that it was not affecting any residents, that the illumination from that at the residence property line was zero illuminations from that sign. I don't have a problem with code. I'm just going through this one and looking at what's proposed. I just feel that there needs to be some more homework done and some more research done to come up with something that would benefit everyone. Just reference that, you know, all the signs along 240 and Highway 47 do require ODOT's approval. And, you know, nothing I didn't really see in the proposed code mentions that. Also look, you know, our neighbors to the north, Gaston has a pretty good sign code for the city of Gaston that goes into a lot more detail than what we proposed. So I just look at it, you know, our sign was put in for public education and some recruitment attention. If this new code goes in, we had to replace that sign, my understanding is we would have to change that sign to comply with current code that this adopts. As I told the council before, our sign is not set up to be turned off and turned on. The backside is not able to dim any more than what it is. And if we modify that any, it voids our warranty.
Right.
And that was a $40,000 sign. We do dim the reader portion of it to 10% at night. We don't even run the reader board portion at 100% during the day, like the most is 75. So we're not running that at full power. So like I said, I'm not against code. I just think there needs to be some more research and more definition put into this before it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Disbrow. Jay?
No, my comments are for carports.
For carports?
Yes.
And then moving on would be Mr. Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Shay. I represent Yamhill Neighborhood Association and our membership, as well as many residents in the city. As Brian Jensen has already stated, I think this commission needs to go back to the drawing board to outline some major holes in this situation. For instance, he spoke about ODOT being part of the decision-making process for any signs, because Maple Street is actually a state highway and is governed by ODOT. So you have to pass ODOT as you almost did when you put in your blinking speed limit signs at the end of town without permission. So with that said, I think, like I said, you need to go back and look at some ordinances. I've looked at 6 city ordinances within their surrounding area by about 40 miles, and a lot of the ordinances for signs are very extensive, and I'm talking 8, 10, 12 pages worth of extensiveness. I don't know if we need to go that far, but why did they go that far? They went that far because they felt it was necessary to identify each and every point that they were making within the reader board sign, the static signs, the hanging signs, the regular signs that hang on businesses and whatnot. They have specific codes, and they always go back to the fact that the permission granted by the city needs to be reviewed each and every time a new sign wants to come up for permit. So with that said, I'd like to make a suggestion that you change item 15D from 100 feet to 200 feet, only because there are so many residences that back right up to businesses. And like Patty said, we have a city that's intermixed with residences inside the business section. So a bright sign, for instance, at Brian's fire sign was running full blower, which it was in its very beginning. You could see that sign from 2 blocks away. Plenty, plenty good. So if it's that bright 2 blocks away, imagine what a sign would be at 100 feet right next door to your house. So with that said, I would suggest you move that 100 feet to 200 feet if you're going to pass this resolution in the first place. But I will mention that Oregon City has a updated public process of a final report of 2014 that this type of sign is not allowed under the current sign code, but may be permitted through a zoning variance. I will also say that ORS 377.720, parenthesis 3, also prohibits any of these kinds of signs. That I can read a definition. Let me see if I can find that page. So ORS 377.720, section, I've lost my place here, so I can hang on. 3 contains, includes, eliminates any flashing, intermittent, revolving, rotating, or moving lights or movies, or has any animated or moving parts. This subsection applies to and does not apply to traffic codes and whatnot, but what it does is it prohibits, the ORS prohibits that kind of a sign. I also want to call your attention to rule, Oregon Department of Transportation, rule 734-060-019, that also states to the advertising signs and LED variable message signs, and prohibits certain signs within state highways and on state highways. And 47 is a state highway along with 240. So anyway, I just wanted to make those points. And let me see if I have one last point. Oh, yes. While Scenic America asserts that the study was enough to convince the Swedish government to remove the digital billboards from their highways in Stockholm, the study itself concludes that while digital billboards do affect a longer gaze than static signs, billboards have an effect on gaze behavior by attracting more and longer glances than regular traffic signs. Whether the billboards attract attention too much, that is, whether they are a traffic safety hazard, cannot be answered conclusively based on the present data. But I will also include the fact that the city of Lebanon outlawed these signs too. It is unlawful for any person to install, display, or maintain, and permit shall not be issued for the installation, display, or maintenance of any sign or advertising structure following within the following descriptions: moving signs, flashing signs, or any sign or sign structure that has any visibility of moving parts or visible mechanic motion, movement, or any description of apparent visible movement achieved by any means, including intermittent or sequential electrical pulsation, illuminated signs using strobostropic or comparable means for animation and action by means of normal wind currents. So there's lots of information out there that prohibits the use of any of these signs in certain cities. So I would suggest that the council just take a pause, go back, look at some more facts, find out whether ORS, Oregon Highways Department, will allow any change in your sign ordinance. And I'd look at more specifics as to what you're going to outline in your new ordinance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody online that's going to have it?
Hello, Carol Prendergast. Hello. I'm going to make a comment as a citizen and as a prior Planning Commission member to a couple of different facts. And I know that Walt read earlier to you folks that this fire station sign was grandfathered in, although I still personally dispute the fact that it went in illegally, that it was not brought before the Planning Commission, that it was signed off by two city employees, one of which had been fired because of that, and because of his email back to City Hall when it was brought to his attention. And we're talking John Morgan, our prior city planner. When it was brought to his attention that this sign did not meet code, his response back in writing and on file is, "Don't ask, don't tell." At that point, Sam Fox, who was a Planning Commission member, and myself met with the mayor and to go over this problem that we were having. And because as a citizen, I made my one and only ever nuisance complaint against the city because the sign was extremely annoying to me. And if you read the code, it says within 100 feet of your property. Now, the city took upon itself to find an electrician to come out and stand on my front porch, not on the property line, and take a reading, which read zero. He came out with the high technology of a cell phone to take a lumen study. I'm still disputing that. The fact that I received a letter saying the problem was resolved, it has not been resolved. When this sign was going in, Brian Jensen approached not only my husband, but my neighbor, Armando, who lives right next to me, that the sign would not shine into our homes. It does. It is still a nuisance. It went in illegally. And because it did not come follow the proper procedures of coming before the Planning Commission, I still find it to be an illegal sign. And to hear that it's grandfathered in is extremely upsetting to me, because I want to know as a citizen, how can a sign that did not meet code be grandfathered into our city? And the problem still exists. And as I said, Brian, I met with Brian and the city planner over the phone to try to resolve it at one point. And the resolution came up to put blinds in my house, which was not a resolution for me at all. The sign's still annoying. It still shines into my home. It is less than 100 feet from my property line, which is what the code states, but the city deemed that it's grandfathered in. I find that totally unconscionable. As a resident in the city, the sign still was shut off for a period of time until the study could be done and they could find an electrician to come with his high technology of an iPhone to do the lumen study. And I know the city had to pay the electrician $400 for coming and standing on my porch, which is a greater distance than my property line, to take the amount of lumens. And while that sign was off on my side during that period of time, it was perfect. All it says is Yamhill Fire District. It can be turned on and turned off. It might be a hassle for Brian to go down and do that every day, but it is not impossible. And I still dispute the fact that this sign was grandfathered in and it was put in illegally, because it did not come before the proper channels of coming before the Planning Commission, like this situation is coming before the Planning Commission, as that sign should have come before the Planning Commission. And it did not. So we didn't even get to discuss it as a Planning Commission, which we, when we did get to address it, when we were allowed to talk about it at certain meetings, we said that they should be shut off at night. I still feel that same way. They want to light it up during the day. It's an ugly sign. Let them go for it. Go ahead and light it up. But at night, it should be shut off. And as far as it being grandfathered in, I find that unconscionable, because it was illegal in the beginning. And that's my statement to the Planning Commission.
I've got a question for you, Walt.
Sure.
So if I understand this correctly, this was initiated by City Council for planning to review the criteria for these signs. Is that right?
That's sort of my understanding. Again, I came in as probably late as most of the commission members, but it was certainly the fire district sign that started this whole discussion. I'd also like to clarify one item, if I may. Sir?
Oh, please, yeah. Okay.
This sign, the sign that's currently in place, is only grandfathered if this passes, because now we have regulations. Right now, we have no provisions for, Carol is correct, we have no provisions for the sign that was installed. So I'm going to leave it up to legal minds to address that issue. But if this is passed, then it is effectively pre-existing and non-conforming. However, if I may, sir, just this hearing has been very, very interesting, bringing up some additional material. When I walked into this, I basically took what was provided, was able to provide, you know, findings for its support. But if it's acceptable to the Planning Commission, and you know, obviously more public input is more than welcome, but I'd like to go back to the drawing board as suggested and go ahead and maybe make some revisions here, or at least provide some suggestions for revisions that the Planning Commission might consider to address some of the concerns offered by the public.
Okay.
Mr. Davis?
So I'd like to clarify something that was asked just a few minutes ago as to the recommendation. If you look at Walt Wendelowski's report, recommendation 4, it says, city staff finds the proposal complies with the identified criteria and recommends the Planning Commission recommend the City Council approve the proposed development code amendments contained in attachment A. It doesn't say the City Council, it says the city staff. So I just wanted to make that point clear.
Thank you, yes. Well, can we go to discussion on Planning Commission? Find out what we want to do with this?
That would be fine. I think there's some very interesting comments that have emerged from this discussion.
I agree.
And instead of hashing them out tonight, which we could, I think I'd like to take this information that's been provided, and if it's acceptable to the commission, just simply continue this hearing until next month. We don't have to renotice, and allow me to come back with some revisions for the Planning Commission to consider.
I think we're in agreement here, Ms. Richardson. How do you feel about that?
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
We got dropped into the middle of a continuance on the subdivision.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So is this going, if we're going to have a continuance, do we only have next meeting to make a decision then?
No, and that's a very good question, because this is not a quasi-judicial matter that the subdivision was. This is legislative. You can hate to use the phrase, but you can kick the can down the road as long as you want. You do not have a time limit to complete a legislative action.
Okay, well, I just, anything that comes that we're going to be doing from my point of view, if it's already been kicked down the road to mm-hmm. another time like this has, we need to be made aware of it so that we can be prepared as a, I mean, I'm not pro or against anything. I want to hear all of the information and then be able to make a viable decision. But when we're put in the middle of it, I don't think that we're able to do that. And I think it's putting our reputation individually as well as the commission at in a bad position if we don't come in with all the information.
Well, you certainly have your hearings. I mean, you've certainly collected information tonight. If you continue it, you are able to take more information. I would also note to the Planning Commission, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but as a legislative matter, you are free to discuss this with anyone at any time. You do not face the restrictions of, say, looking at a conditional use or a subdivision. So if you're at the coffee shop, want to chat with someone about the signage, you are more than welcome to do so. This is a legislative action, and this is where the public gets to be involved in terms of changing the code.
So where will you be doing your gathering of information from?
Well, what I'm doing is a couple of things. It is interesting to note the Lebanon Development Ordinance. Just before I left, I did write something on changeable signs, and maybe the gentleman from the YNA was looking at something a little older. But what I will do is look at other communities of the general size. I think, you know, looking at Portland sign code may not be the best example. I would definitely provide some more options for the Planning Commission to consider. You know, there was discussions on, you know, location. Just as an example, I have about three or four little notes here that I could follow up, but sort of identify the areas of concern and then provide some options for the Planning Commission to consider.
Okay, and then I, you know, and I don't mean this wrong when I'm saying it, but this was given to us in a format of let's sign off on this thing and send it on.
Mm-hmm.
There, the city staff is stretched thin as it is. So so to have to take all of our, what if we do this and what do you think about that? And throw it into this kind of a complicated piece of paper is going to take up an awful lot of their time, unless they've got something canned that I don't think that they have. And so why can't we discuss this stuff? And then if we think that it is going to work, then give them our findings and have them put it into the proper format for us to make a decision on.
Okay, well, I think that's a very good point. Please note that when it comes to the larger projects, I do compile this information together for the staff report. So I am the one that's assigned to do the research, looking at options and providing recommendations. I somewhat concur with you that I walked into it about the same time as a lot of people did. This is what was provided at that juncture. It seemed reasonable. At that juncture, I had no background in terms of public sentiment, comments, or any work sessions. And so we are where we are. And based on some of these comments, I think we could make things a little bit better. And I think maybe address some of those concerns.
That makes sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to clarify something that Walt said.
Okay.
Walt, if I understand you correctly, ex parte does not apply to this situation.
That is absolutely correct. This is a legislative matter, and the Planning Commission members are more than welcome to chat with anyone they see fit.
Thank you. Well, what I would think that would be probably the best thing to do here is to do exactly what you recommend, is go back, get that more information. We'd have a chance to talk with our friends, families that live here in town. Ms. Richardson's got a good point. We should all probably take it upon ourselves to do a bit of research ourselves. And again, like Walt said, let's meet back at the next Planning Commission meeting and continue this.
Okay. If that is the case, then the Planning Commission will need to make a formal motion to continue the hearing until the April meeting.
Would anybody like to make that motion?
I'll make that motion that we table it until the
next
April 20.
April 20?
Yes.
We have a second?
I'll second it.
I guess that's when you do that.
Fair.
Yes, sir.
They put a motion on the table. They haven't taken the vote yet.
Excuse me.
They need to continue with the process.
Okay, so yes, right. We need to do a vote then. So I would start with Commissioner Corrigan, aye.
Carl, aye. Hodgkins, aye.
Richardson, aye.
Passes unanimously to table.
Thank you. Okay, so I will return with the staff report going through some of these issues. Possibly even adding some sections from other development codes with regard to changeable signs. And this has been a very good discussion. I wish I was on board when this whole thing started. I think some of the comments here are pretty on point, and I will follow up with a staff report for the April meeting.
The carport.
Yes.
So staff report for the. Would we be able to what? Just say a word here, in between.
You're the chair, and you're able to allow.
If we were to go quick, Jay, you had.
This is a kind of a process concern.
Okay.
Procedural concern is, in regard to the fire district sign. My concern is that it was being grandfathered in through a process that was not legal, that circumvented the Planning Commission and circumvented city ordinances. And my concern is that now they're setting up kind of a precedence for that to happen in the future. If somebody doesn't want to go through the process, I think the city needs to be very, very vigilant when it comes to their processes to prevent this from happening in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, can we move on to the carports? So staff report for the carports.
Okay, the second item on tonight's agenda is a development code amendment for temporary accessory structures used as garages or carports. Again, just like the prior report, the language under consideration is found in attachment A. Basically, there's seven basic items here. The language is designed to address structures which are manufactured offsite and assembled or constructed on the property. Coverings are limited to the manufacturer's products, must be structurally sound and comply with the structural code. Only one structure is allowed in a zone, residential zone, but may be located in any yard. These structures have to meet the front yard setback of 20 feet. Side yard setbacks also apply, located in the side yard. And a minimum of 5 foot setback from all property lines, the structure is placed in the rear yard, does not exceed 10 feet in height, and structures exceeding 10 feet in height must maintain a 10 foot setback from the rear property line. Structures within non-residential zones must comply with the setback requirements of the zone. Otherwise, there are no restrictions. And again, I will simply note that we do not have a provision in the code for text amendments to the code itself, but again, substituting amendments to the comprehensive plan, generally able to arrive that the proposal would be able to comply. And again, note, this is really a local aesthetic issue. DLCD was notified of the change and saw no issue with that. I will like to note, and I recall this from our discussion, I believe we had this back in October or November, but last year, I think part of the issue was people would have a boat or some sort of RV in the side property, and they wanted to put a cover over it. The regulations you have here will not allow you to do that unless there is a significant side yard setback. So if you maintain a minimum setback of 10 feet and park your boat there, this type of structure would not be permitted. And I know that was discussed. And again, I'm moving forward with the recommendation of the commission from last year, but I just want you to understand that these are structures that are required to meet all the setbacks of the underlying zone. Nothing changes with that. And as such, they would may not get you where you want to go. So I want to raise that issue with the commission just to be upfront in terms of what I was able to research on this. And with that, conclude the report and answer any questions you may have. Excuse me.
Can we go to public comment on that?
You are welcome to take comments either as a commissioner from the public, but I know when we ended the commission meeting last time discussing this, I think there was some concern with the commission that this may not get you this may not take you where you want to go.
I was at that meeting, and that's what I recall from it as well.
Okay.
I think that we can listen to the public and see what they have to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people spoke on the last. Does anybody like to speak on this? Please.
I would like a clear definition on what they deem as temporary. 30 days? I mean, 5 years?
It says, I don't think that is spelled out, is it, Walt, on how long the structure itself can be up?
No, there's no limit to how long the structure can be up, but it is a temporary type of structure that it can be dismantled and moved. Let's say compared to a site-built garage, which is a pretty permanent structure, these are essentially portable. Yeah. So there is no limit.
Does anybody happen to know if code enforcement, is anybody upset about this? Either way, current one? Do you know? I don't know.
Chair Corrigan,
yes?
Are you asking if we've had any code enforcement complaints?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't believe that I've seen any. I have to go back through and review.
Would anybody else like to speak on this? Yes, ma'am. Okay.
What else is new, right?
Hey, I'm hit. Let's go.
So I guess what my concern is, and I don't have an issue with it because I don't have an issue with that kind of thing at my house. But I'm going to use Bob, for instance. He doesn't have a backyard. He has a side yard, which is right on Maple. So if he were to say he didn't have a garage and he tried to put up something to, you know, put a vehicle in, he wouldn't be able to do that because he doesn't have access to any part of his house other than the front. If somebody else on 47, for instance, wanted to put up a temporary carport, for instance, anybody that lives on 47 doesn't have access to a backyard because they're on Highway 47, and then there's another property that butts up to them on Olive. So a lot of the homes in on 47 and Olive, anybody that butts up to somebody behind them doesn't have access to their backyard unless they have access between their neighbors. So I guess I'm not quite understanding what the logic is for the setbacks and where it can be placed. And if it's temporary and nobody's argued about it or complained about it, why is it even being addressed?
I mean, honestly, Walt, what happens if we decided, I mean, this is just throwing it out. Can we just do nothing with this if we wanted to?
That is certainly one of the options. Or if you want to, you can just, you know, that is certainly one of the options. And just city staff can communicate to the city council that the planning commission saw no benefit. And but no reason at this time to amend the code. The other option is to simply vote and say, we disagree. Let me see, we don't see a need, pass this up to the council. And if the council wants to hear it, fine. And if they don't, leave it up to them. But you're just welcome to table this.
So how did this come into being?
Well, again, I'm sort of late to the party on this one. And I think there may have been some issue about these being purchased and constructed. Bear in mind, they still have to, even without this language, they're still required to comply with the state structural code. These are structures, even though they are portable or temporary, they are still our structures. It must meet all things like, you know, wind shear and snow load and everything. So I can't help you out. I wish I can provide more information. And again, the first time I really saw this was back at my first meeting in 2021. And I do recall the discussion wondering, is this going to solve a problem? And I think the other side of that coin was, do we have a problem that needs solving? So I just want to raise that.
Well,
excuse me.
Yes.
You may want to table this until a meeting that Ken Moore can attend. I know that he's actively working on this issue and he may have more background information on it.
Very good.
I think that sounds perfect.
Shane?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a comment. So, YNA again would like to say for its membership and the residents in town, there is a passage in this document that we don't agree with. My house was built, was being built in 1935. It was finished in 1938. If you were to ask me to, when I work on my house, to find original parts for my house, straight grain lumber, full 2x4, full 4x4, 4x6, 4x8 timbers, and I have a roof that is made out of 2x6 redwood, straight grain, tongue and groove, which would absolutely cost you an unfortunate huge amount of money to replace. Why saying that, I'm talking about my house was built in 38. So how would I find original parts? In this document, you list that the any replacement parts on this structure would have to be original parts. I'm sorry. Where are you going to find original parts if it was 10 years old? You'd be lucky if you find original parts for if it was 4 years old or even 3 or 2 years old. So with that said, I would like to have that language changed to or adequate or similar or
aftermarket comparable, something to that.
Or something other than for original parts, because you're not going to find original parts.
So I put this down as a note. I think that she's correct, considering that the chair is not able to attend tonight.
Yes. But I just wanted to make
that. Ms. Richardson, anybody of the other commissioners would like to move forward with it. I think that we should double check with Ken and move forward then. And I don't want to kick everything down the road here. I would like to get some of these things. These have been on planning commission for over a year. And I think that there's some issues that we could get solved in Yamhill. But I think that we're pretty close on this one, I believe. But she's correct, Mr. Moore probably should have an opportunity since he was involved in it.
Well, and like Sue said earlier too, I mean, we're kind of coming
in late to the party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just like Walt too, so.
Yeah, because I'd like to get some feedback from Ken on this because I'm not sure why this is even here at this point. I mean, there must be a very good reason. So let's find out. Is everybody good with that?
Yeah.
Excuse me, Chair Corrigan. I can point the planning commission to the audio files for the meetings, the planning meetings that they discussed carports, if that would be helpful.
Okay.
May I also suggest that just to keep for the record that you continue this one as well into the April meeting. And Ken should be back by then. And I think after listening to the recording, I think everyone will probably be in a little bit better position to discuss this.
So there is nothing backing up anything to give us this information, because I look at this.
Correct.
I look at the 10.132.070, 080, 090, and none of it. There's nothing here that gives us. It's like throwing a piece of pie at the wall and expecting it to stick. There's nothing here. You know, how can you make a decision when there's nothing to substantiate it? So this recording, could we possibly get a copy of it sent to us so that we could listen to it, or?
I believe it's, is it posted currently, the recording, Sharon?
Yes, it's posted. And as I was saying earlier, I don't know if you heard me, Sue, that I would go through and figure out exactly which recording it was. And then I would send an email to the Planning Commission so that they can review that audio. It is okay for them to email or contact Chair Moore, is that correct, Walt?
Yes, in fact, again, they can listen to the recording, they can contact the chair. All discussions are allowed.
And the Planning Commission should all have each other's email addresses. They should be able to contact each other, so that will be another avenue for getting some background information.
But bear in mind, if you're going to have all the commission members having a discussion amongst themselves, you may run into a public meeting requirement. In other words, once you have three or four conversing, that is basically a quorum of the Planning Commission. And you do have your public notice requirement. Sharing information, though, with the Planning Commission, how to obtain the recording, et cetera, that's fine. Contacting staff, city staff, planning staff, that's all legitimate. It stops when the commission starts discussing, if you will, outside the public hearing. Even though you could talk to anyone you want to, when it comes time to deliberation and making a decision, it has to all be in front of the public.
Would it be best, Walt, if I requested from Chair Moore that he provide some background information and then forward that to the Planning Commission, rather than the Planning Commissioners potentially getting into some sort of a quorum situation?
I think that would be a very good idea, because if he could provide a summary to share, just take that information and pop it in the a file that's associated with this request.
Okay, will do.
Yeah.
Is that acceptable, Chair Corrigan?
100%.
Okay. Shay, I have one other question.
All right.
On the last page, the attachment A, where it talks about vehicle storage, is that's part of the structure thing that you're talking about, right? On the last, okay.
That's how I understand it.
Okay.
So, yes.
So my question on this is, it says trailer. It uses the word trailer. Trailer coaches, camper units, and trailers shall not be stored in a required front or side yard. I asked this when this was discussed before. What are you saying when you say trailer? What does that mean? Is that a pull behind camper type trailer, utility trailer? Which one is that? Yeah, boat, so it could be a boat.
I read because it says trailer coaches, camper units, and trailers.
Okay, so
I think it covers anything you pull, mostly.
Okay.
But then, from what I understand, Walt, you have to help me on this one. Shall not be stored in a required front yard, front or side yard. Required would mean within the setback.
Okay.
Is that true?
That is true. And the only exception is a driveway.
Okay. But it doesn't state that on here. And because it doesn't have anything, nothing is stated about a driveway. And so there's many people in this town that have utility trailers.
Parked in the driveway and such.
Yeah.
So if I understand though correctly, well, if this was to be talked about tonight and move forward on, required, your driveway is not required, front or side yard, correct?
Right.
Driveway is an exemption to that. So if it's in your driveway, according to the way this would read, if it was to be moved on tonight, you'd still be allowed to have a trailer, camper, or whatever in your driveway, right, Walt?
Right. That doesn't change it because you can park a vehicle on your driveway. What this language, again, this is already existing language. This is not new language. In fact, was adopted back in the year 2000. This is a situation where you don't want to park a trailer in your front yard. That's the intent. You park it in your driveway, you're fine, but not within that front yard setback.
Okay, so somebody can park vehicles in their front yard, but they can't put a trailer or utility trailer or any of that kind of thing, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it says vehicle storage.
I'm not being smart when I say that, because you see that within the city. People park in their front yard, literally. Wow. Not their driveway, but their front yard, because they have
lots of vehicles
that they can't fit in their driveway. So they park in their front yard.
So what I like, again, I think... Because Ken was involved with this, I think that we need to let him bring up, because he was there for all of it, whether or not there's a problem to be solved or how this came about. And I think that in part of that, putting this off to, what is it, the 20th of April? Right. I think we can check with code enforcement and see if there's been issues like that. But I think regardless of the language, I think that providing Mr. Moore an opportunity to speak on it, I think is key. But I have, just so that everybody knows, I put notes required as underlined. I have Mr. Davis's notes about the original. Those are all questions I have as well. I think Mr. Moore can clear it up for us in record time, I would imagine.
Hopefully.
Right? So... Because now we're getting good at kicking cans. Can I get a motion to move this to the next planning meeting?
I motion to move it to the next meeting.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Then we should take a vote. Commissioner Corrigan, aye.
Carl, aye. Hodgkins, aye.
Richardson, aye.
So it's next month. And I think... commissioner comments, discussion. Does anybody have anything that they need to? No, Ms. Richardson.
No, I really just hope we get some real meat to be able to digest so that we know what we're doing next time.
Absolutely, I agree with you on that. I think it would be neat to move beyond carports and signs. I took before the class that Mr. Morgan taught on planning that I think Petra had us listen to. There was a line in there that I absolutely loved that was, a planning commission should do the most good for the most people for the longest time. I think we need to pay attention to that and get on to that. That's just my opinion.
Right. And if there's more things like this coming up, I'd like to be aware of it.
I think, absolutely. I think so. We should all be on it. The funny thing is that your commission is quicker than you think. And these things get kicked along. And then next thing you know, there's a whole new set of commissioners. Mm-hmm. And we're not addressing issues that the city needs to have addressed. So we've just spent, an hour and 20 minutes on things that have been met about three times, at least that I'm aware of, and probably more. So I think that we should probably refocus our efforts, get these things taken care of as fast as we can, and move along to the things that Yamhill needs from us. So does anybody else have anything?
I do. Unless there's a bit of real outcry because of these two things we discussed tonight, I could see where safety might be an issue, but that's up to the police department to make that call. And I want to know what's next. My neighbor don't like the color of my house. You're going to force me to repaint it? Where does private property enter into all this?
And again, I think that's legitimate. Or to show the lightness as to where this came from, and then we should take swift action. Either gather enough information to decide what we're doing about it or have this just go away. Anybody? Go ahead.
Kind of in regard to your question, discussions in the past have been regarding compliance. Is that compliance has been mainly complaint-driven. That we don't have a compliance officer that's going to go around and just start looking for stuff. But somebody has to file a complaint. And that's very common in jurisdictions. Even Washington County, which is very large, they state in their ordinance that they are complaint-driven. And if it's a verbal complaint, it doesn't get as much attention if it's a signed written complaint. But they don't have time to send people around. So obviously our jurisdiction is going to have time to put a compliance officer out on the streets.
We actually have a code.
We do have a
agent, compliance right?
officer, yes.
We do?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I mean, that's not his only function. He right. serves as a
yes.
city of Yamhill police officer. But if somebody were to call with a code violation, he would be the one that would be dispatched to deal with that. Is that true?
As far as I know, I can verify that with Chief Graven.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
No one wants? Anybody else? So I would move to adjourn the meeting. I get a second.
I'll second it.
We're about done.
We're done.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Thank you all. Okay. Well,
there's the commitment. Somebody put their fishing boat and their campfire.
So this stuff on signs?
The
signs? No, what would be the best way to get
maybe they should let us turn our yard.
Yes.
So it would go into the record and I could scan it in and then I could email it out to all the commissioners.
And we're including all of this.
You can. I mean, yeah.
I mean, this is, and that's up to you.
Yeah, we should meet it.
Okay.
We do have the nuisance complaint in the picture. That's the same that you said before. So did you want to keep that for yourself?
I have a copy of it.
Or did you want to submit it?
It can go in. Yeah.
I think
I can get this all
too many rules. Know where you're coming from.
When you go
to the living room, then you go into your bedroom, then you go into your bathroom, and then you pass by the other bedroom, and then you go to the kitchen. And
well, we have a 1913 craftsman. So between.
Well, I know exactly what your house is. I talked to you probably 10 years ago.
I grew up there. Go through and get all the information.
Really?
Do it correctly.
I agree. Not just to make sure that it's done correctly.
So something like that.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
Why didn't I ask you what your house looked like?
Thank you. It's just today.
You did.